Welcome, dear listeners, to this week's Afternoon Satsang. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Arvind. We offer our most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet as we begin this week's Afternoon Satsang, which is in fact a continuation of what we had last week. And those of you who are with us would know that we were speaking about the unique aspects of Swami's, the hostels of Swami's educational institutions. And one statement which Swami would often repeat, and he would say that the only sadhana which my students need to perform is strictly and wholeheartedly follow the schedule of the hostel. So we were trying to critically look at that schedule, look at the various aspects of it, and see what warranted Swami to give such a blanket blessing for all of us. As always, I invite Arvind to join me in the discussion. I have even Sarprakash with me, like last year. Sairam to both of you.
Yeah, Sairam Prem. And yeah, it's Sairam to all our listeners also. And it is fantastic that we are continuing on this topic. Last week we had briefly outlined the whole hostel schedule, and we had started off from the morning. We covered a few aspects, I think Suprabhatam, and after that the jogging, the games, and then the breakfast time, and then we had just left for the institute or for the classes in the school. That was all we could cover last week, and we had a few queries from our listeners. Last week we spoke about how Swami has divided the day into three parts, each part of 8 hours, Sattvic time, Rajasic time, Tamasic time. And the query was, when 8 a.m. is, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. is Rajasic time, why do we have bhajans and all in the Rajasic time? It should be in the Sattvic time. Similarly, why are boys playing games in the Sattvic time? I just thought we should make a clarification that we were talking only about the hostel schedule, not of the mandir schedule. The mandir schedule becomes a different ball game. It's because though we have something like a prescribed healthy balanced diet that we should consume every day for our good health, when we go on a special diet plan, either to put on weight or to lose weight or because of some health condition that requires, then all the other things are just annulled. We start afresh and have our own different eating schedule, which is also healthy, though it is not actually the balanced diet that is generally prescribed. So too, I feel, in Prashantiniliam, the mandir, if we see the way Prashantiniliam ashram itself functions, the ashram is a very special place. Of course, about 10 to 20% of the people attending the Kulwant Hall sessions are the permanent residents. But generally, it is the people who keep visiting Prashantiniliam once in a while. Maybe that once in a while can be as frequent as once every month also, but it is like that special diet they undertake, like they come here as a pilgrimage, as a special sadhana time. So when they come like that, it is a focused visit, so therefore the schedule is different. The schedule we were talking is not of the ashram schedule, but only of the hostel schedule. And in the hostel schedule, in both the sattvic times, we have prayers. The evening sattvic time, we have prayers in the mandir. The morning sattvic time, we have suprabhatam and prayers. So, answering that one doubt, making that clarification, I think we shall proceed ahead with the hostel schedule and hostel life.
I think one more thing which probably needs to be mentioned is, many times what we do is take a statement of Swami and we kind of try to find reasons to understand why Swami made that statement. But not necessarily the reasons are the, what we find as reasoning are the only reasons why we follow that particular adage or
that is just our understanding.
Yeah, because many, even in the schedule, what Swami would often say is this very statement. The idea is, give up your thoughts and your understanding of what is sadhana, what is, you know, spirituality, what you need to do to become more spiritual, and do what I am telling you to do. You know, when Swami said follow the hostel schedule, Swami would also emphasize that I have created this schedule. Okay, so what you're placing your faith on is not on the schedule as such, but you're placing your faith on Swami.
Who has created the schedule?
Who has created the schedule. And that's why many times in the hostel what would happen is, we would see the entire hostel schedule, you know, transforming itself to give more importance and to make Swami the center of that schedule. Like for instance, when Swami would come to Vrindavan, I remember once Swami was there in the December. Whenever Swami is in Vrindavan, the schedule would be that we would get up in the morning, go for our jogging, then we would finish our breakfast and then come for darshan. I'm sorry, we would come for darshan, and after darshan we would go and have our breakfast. Mm. That was the schedule. I think one December Swami came out, it was very, very cold. And, you know, that's again the beauty of Swami. And these are all the ways we learn from Swami, not just through the schedule, just through the, in the hostel. I remember Swami came out and Swami just stepped out. You know, the Thrayi has this marble flooring. Swami just put his foot on the marble and literally pounced back. He said, my God, this is so cold. Hmm. Okay. And immediately the next thing Swami said was, it's so cold at 7 o'clock in the morning. The devotees will come at 5:30. It must be so much more colder. Imagine, that's the first thought, and Swami immediately calls the warden and says, make an announcement after bhajans today that tomorrow onwards darshan will not be before 8:30. Tell devotees they should not assemble before 6 o'clock. So when Swami did that, when coming back to the entire schedule rearranged itself so that we could, you know, be available for that darshan time, because that was the most important thing.
Naturally, just imagine if somebody were narrow-minded enough to say that this is a schedule, we stick to it, and in sticking to the schedule, you come at 7:30, Swami, you have not come for darshan, fine, 8 o'clock is breakfast time, we are going back, 8 o'clock is Rajasic time, it is not the time for darshan. I mean, it is so foolhardy to do that. So, I really feel, yeah, that is a very valid point you have made, Prem, that the schedule is so important because it's made by Swami, and if at all anything is coming clashing with what Swami has said, then of course Swami's word takes precedence over anything else.
Right. And another time was, I think, in 2006 and 2007, Swami started coming out for darshan at 10 o'clock. So boys would go for institute after around 11 o'clock. It's almost like lunchtime. And I think that was an expression of the importance we gave to Swami. I'm not saying that all of us need to live like that. There were a lot of people who were living in Bangalore who had to come for darshan. It's not that everybody could do that, but when you have an opportunity to express this importance you're giving to Swami through these means, I think that is what we had when following these schedules.
And I feel that is another plus of the hostel schedule, Prem, because in the hostel also, though this is a schedule, this is not watertight. In fact, what I read out as the schedule last week during the satsang is the modified one. It was different in 2008. It was slightly different in 2004 because it varied according to the situations, deshakala parastiti, as Swami would say. For example, in January and December during the sports meet time, the schedule would have changed a lot, with a lot more importance being given to sports and games and academics almost being neglected. The same thing when it came to the semester end exams, you would see sports and games take a back seat, academics taking the front seat. When it came to a time like convocation drama, a sports meet drama for Swami, everything would take a back seat, you know, including exams at the national level. There are students who have sacrificed. I mean, we call it sacrifice. They don't feel it's a sacrifice, because anything done for God is not a sacrifice for them. So it all changes. It is flexible. And I feel the hostel schedule, living in the hostel, apart from teaching us the discipline of sticking to a schedule, also imparts us with sufficient flexibility so that that discipline doesn't transform into a negative rigidity in us. It keeps us flexible, changeable, adaptable, at the same time disciplined. That is a beautiful gift of the hostel.
Yeah, it's like, you know, there is a schedule, but what takes precedence over the schedule is the spirit in which the schedule was set.
Beautiful.
Right? So in case there is this rigidity about these timings, but if the spirit in which it was told and in which it was set, because even when we were in our school and our college days, in the summer months, the darshan would be postponed, the afternoon darshan. Swami would come out at 3:30 or 4 earlier. He would say, I'll come out only at 4:30 because it would be too hot. 4:30, sometimes even 4:45 or so. Sorry. And the bhajan session also would be postponed. It would go to starting at 5:30 to 6. And in the winter months, it will be advanced. So, the spirit with which the schedule was set was always flexible in that note.
I remember that some of these Vrindavan teachers used to tell us that in old Vrindavan, when Swami used to come, the students used to spend almost the entire day with Swami. So, it's almost like nil to the academics, except for those few hours they spend in the classroom. And Swami would kind of be okay with that. In fact, Swami would want them to do that. And some would tell them that, I'm here, spend time with me. You can always catch up with studies later, or literally like that. And during the exam times, and those days, universities used to have about a month of study holidays just before your finals begin. So that time Swami would say that, no, now you better study. And Swami would go to the extent of telling that, make an announcement that Swami will give darshans only on Thursdays and Sundays. Because too many devotees coming into the ashram, boys get disturbed.
Oh.
You know, the way Swami did it was like, this is how much importance I am giving to your welfare. How much importance will you give to what is dear to me?
You know, Prem, when you narrated this, and when Sai Prakash narrated what he said about the spirit being important, it reminded me of a very beautiful, powerful, poignant, use as many adjectives as you want, discourse that Swami delivered in the higher secondary school hostel on the 18th of January, 1996 to be precise. Why I'm saying this is, in that discourse, Swami clearly mentioned the reason why he's dedicating 3/4 of his time to the students.
Mm-hmm.
He said that what is in Swami's heart has to be shown by you in your actions. That is the reason why Swami is spending so much time with you, 3/4 of his time. And in that very discourse, you know, Swami mentioned that there is an Ashtanga Yoga, the eightfold path of yoga, which consists of Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, Samadhi, where Yama is sense control, Niyama is discipline, Asana is posture, Pranayama is breath control, Pratyahara is complete withdrawal of senses, Dharana Dhyana Samadhi stands for contemplation, concentration, contemplation and meditation. In that also, Swami said the first one, Yama, sense control. Yama has 5 parts. This is a standard traditional way it is dilated upon. And Swami also dilated upon that, saying the 5 parts of Yama are Ahimsa, Satya, Asteya, Brahmacharya and Aparigraha. I think during the course of this satsang, we'll go into detail of each of those. But, you know, the way Swami has dilated upon these is so fantastic, because there is a standard dilation which is available. You just have to go and Google it and you will come across so many explanations of what these 5 are. But the way Swami has given the deep inner meaning of these is so profound. When Sai Prakash was mentioning about the spirit behind, I was reminded of what Swami speaks of one of these 5, which is Satya. For that, because Sai Prakash mentioned, let us take up Satya first. Swami says, though Satya is translated as truth, it does not merely lie in just speaking facts as they are. In fact, Swami has mentioned many times, Nabruyat Satyam Apriyam. Do not speak an unpleasant truth. In that discourse, Swami says, Satyam means sticking to your conscience, abiding by the conscience. It is not about 100% mentioning facts as they are, but it's about questioning whether what I'm speaking, does it need to be spoken? Will it hurt anybody? All these you have to process and work in accordance with your conscience. So Swami defines Satya not as speaking facts and speaking truth, but as being truthful 100% to your own conscience. I feel that resonates. What Sai Prakash said resonates with this, that it's not about being true and sticking to something 100%, but understanding the spirit behind and then acting. Because Swami also said, it is not about just speaking the truth, but being true to your own conscience.
It's like another analogy that comes to my mind is, it's like the back end of a software. There is a code for the software. All these Ashtanga Yoga and Satya, Ahimsa, all this is like the code for the software. When the end user comes to open the software, he has no idea. He just does what he wants to do. But it's all based on these facts. It's based on the code. Similarly, Swami has built the hostel schedule based on these aspects. These are the cornerstones. These are the pillar, the support of this entire structure. But he is not taking us into that. He says, follow this. You follow this schedule in that spirit, then automatically you are fulfilling all the requirements.
In fact, going back to Patanjali's you know, his idea of putting these eightfold path. They basically meant for a yogi, you know, one who is looking
point.
At samadhi.
Yeah.
But again, as you said, each one is broken down. In fact, in this discourse, Swami says that you don't even have to go till the eight steps. This one first step,
yama,
which is yama, which is consisting of these five sub-steps. Even if you can excel in these, it is enough. You know, automatically, you already set yourself in motion to achieve that. And one of the most beautiful things that Swami has done, not only with respect to students, but generally even his message, if we were to see critically, it is that ability to take the eternal values and to make it absolutely, in sync with the current times.
That's
like, you know, you cannot expect, as Swami would say, that, you know, if I had started a university of meditation or university of yoga, probably, you know, we all wouldn't have been here.
That's right.
You know, the idea was to offer something which was relevant to current times, and in that inbuilt some of these things which probably we wouldn't have bothered to take note of.
Yeah, just looking at the same point from the other side, what is the end result of, you know, studying in this institute? This is not like a gurukulam, this is not like a setup where you, at the end of the, you know, duration, you come out as yogis, or you come out as sannyasis, or you come out as, you know, even possible business, you know, there's no specific outcome. It's an integrated personality. So the whole schedule that has been made is to add to that integrated personality. And if you see, that's how Swami has simplified all these aspects, so that we feel that there is a contemporary, you know, relevance to each of this in our day-to-day life.
Adding on to what Sai Prakash said, as he said, I don't think the objective of the university was to produce yogis. Swami himself has said and stated clearly what is the objective of the university. He says, the end of education is character. That's it. Nothing more, nothing less. The objective is not to produce yogis or meditating people. But if it produces a driver, it will be a driver with character. If it produces a teacher, it will be a teacher with character. A scientist with character, a doctor with character, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. But he or she will have inbuilt character. And character building, whether we accept it on the face or not, actually involves a very spiritual process. And therefore, though it is not explicitly stated by Swami that my curriculum and my hostel is based on these eight pillars, on these, implicitly, inherently, it is all there, because without a spiritual base, you can't build character.
In fact, in this very discourse, Swami says that, you know, he starts like that. If you want to create character, if you want to create a society of character, it has to be based on spirituality. You know, you cannot have something which does not have a spiritual base and try to build character and values on it. Values will have to be based on character. And that's why, you know, even in this, the very first point Swami says is satya. And the way Swami defines it, it's much more than just the spoken truth. You know, when you say that you truth is that which, when you speak your conscience out, you know, when whatever you say is in line with your conscience, I think that itself involves a lot of things. First of all, courage, the ability to, and an amount of detachment. Like, you know, I don't care of what comes and goes, but I have to speak what is right. I have to speak what is.
Also, the awareness that there is a voice of conscience.
Right.
Oftentimes it's the mind. So you are, you know, lost between two voices. You should know at that point what is the voice of conscience.
Right.
What struck me a lot when I read about Swami expanding on satya was that he said that though, you know, it is about speaking the truth. We have seen examples of this, you know, in 11th and 12th standard when we were studying here. Invariably, when we would have an external examiner coming for the public board examinations, he or she would really be stunned at how cheating free the exams are here. Because nobody seems to be ready to, wanting to cheat. They have narrated where in other cases, everybody is just waiting for the external examiner to lose his or her guard and they can copy or cheat. So, but he is stunned that nobody does this here. So much so that, you know, on one occasion I remember during our chemistry practicals, the external examiner told our own teacher saying that you monitor them because, you know, I'm not concerned. I'm sure they will not be copying at all. That was the kind of confidence. So that is there anyway, adherence to truth. But what struck me really was, see, truth is about what we speak, whether it's true or not. But Swami doesn't restrict truth to only what we speak. He takes it deeper. He says, also think of not only about speaking, about acting or thinking. Swami says, don't only concentrate on the what. Concentrate also on the why, on the where, on the how. You know, and all these other things also. And then speak. Because Swami says, truth is not just about sticking to facts, but about being in resonance with your conscience. So conscience is not only about what we do or what we speak or what we think. It's also about how we do it or how we think it. Why we do it or why we think it. Intention. You know, I may speak the truth, but my intention might be actually to put somebody into trouble. So all that comes into play. And that is why Swami says truth is something deeper. It's about being in resonance with your conscience.
And talking about, you know, why we do a certain thing. One of the main ways in which Swami reiterated to us the right spirit in which most of these things have to be done, you know, whether it's the hostel schedule or the other discipline that Swami would give, which is beyond your years in the hostel. Swami would often say this, and many times we've heard, it should come from the source and not by force.
Correct.
And I think many times, even the same example of external examiners coming and being surprised. I have been from a school outside, I've studied till 12th. It's not in every school that it happens, where you don't, you know, you don't need an examiner. I've really seen that even after coming here with much surprise and glee. And Shailesa used to tell about that incident. You know, one external examiner who came, who was like really surprised to see that boys were sitting and like they were least bothered about even
their neighbor,
right? You know, looking for an opportunity to involve in some malpractice. So one of these external examiners came by and looking around and stopped at one boy and made a very casual comment. He said, none of you seem to be, you know, cheating in the exam. You all seem to be very God-fearing students. Okay. And this boy immediately looked up and he said, no, sir, it's wrong. We're not God-fearing, we're God-loving.
Beautiful.
And it's almost like it's not that fear of Swami. Correct. But, you know, this is the best way I can please Swami and this is the easiest way I can please Swami.
There's what comes to my mind is a very subtle aspect of satya, of truth, which Swami always, you know, it's a bit more subtle than what generally we call as truth. That is not to exaggerate. You know, exaggeration and atishayokti, as Swami would say, is something very important. He would, you know, don't do atika prasangam.
Right.
Don't overdo. Don't have a show. Don't put on a show. Don't do anything that is, you know, exaggeration. Because that is something which has to be in control. Truth has to be, you know, spoken or lived as it is. You cannot, you know, there is an example in my own life. Very quickly I wanted to narrate that. See, even when we are relating to Swami, even when we are doing something related to Swami and bring out, we had brought out a CD, an audio CD, in which there was a design on the cover. And this was a collection of songs and kritis sung by the music college boys. So there was a music college photograph and I had done the designing of the cover. And there was a photograph of Swami and all the coconut trees were coming in the background on the cover. So I just cleared it up and put a slight halo. Around Swami. Then I was very happy that the cover has come out very beautiful. So there is a photo of Thyagaraja, Saint Thyagaraja, and behind him is this music college building. And then Swami is standing there, and his face and hair almost reaching into the skies. And artistically, it was very well balanced, as I would say. The moment Swami took that CD cover, he said, who designed the cover? And I said, Swami, I did. Then he said, why did you put this light behind Swami? Did you see it? He asked me. I said, no, Swami, I didn't see it. Then why did you put it? See, the thing, the focus on truth is so absolute that he wouldn't allow you to have, yes, Swami is God. In my heart, I know. If Swami wants, he can show me a darshan of light radiating from every part of his body. in an artistic sense I put it, but in that context, it was an atishayokti because I did not actually see it. So the subtle aspect of truth is not too much, not too less. Truth is truth, absolute, as it is.
You know, Sai Prakash narrating an incident, and before that, Prem, you made the point of how, you know, the why is so important. It's not about God fearing, but God loving. I was reminded of an incident narrated to us by one of our brothers. I think he's 96 or 97, pass out. A certain Pushkaraj Gumaste. And though it might take a few minutes here, I would like to narrate that incident because it highlights many aspects of hostel life here. Now, all of us know that when we are in hostel and Swami is giving darshan, one of the most important goals for us is to get physically close to Swami, win as many interactions as possible. So it was with this Pushkaraj Gumaste. And so what Pushkaraj would do is, he would somehow, you know, jump the fence, break the discipline, skip the line, somehow get to mandir before the lines come. Actually, we have a system of lines which are rotated every day, and there is a way so that everybody gets an equal chance of sitting in the front. But he did not care, and he felt that I want my Swami at any cost, even if it's at the cost of others. And you know, when he was narrating this, I felt in consonance with him. I felt even I would have done anything. Bhagwan ke liye kuch bhi karenge. Nothing is wrong when we are doing it for God. So that is what he was doing. Breaking all the disciplines, skipping the last hour in class, getting to mandir early, all this he used to do. One day, there was the mandir portico where students would be allowed to sit. And everywhere in the front he is there. One day it so happened that he has come early, before the lines he is waiting. So the plan is come and wait. As the lines start coming in, you go in and sit in the front. So that it doesn't look like also you have come very before. Because if you are alone sitting in the mandir, questions may be asked. One day as he is waiting, before the boys can come, Swami comes up for darshan. Now he has two forces pulling him. One is, should I wait for the boys to come? Or you know, who knows, this might be the darshan of my life. I am the only student there. So he rushed in. He rushed in and sat right in the front. And Swami came, and as he thought, Swami noticed him because he was the only student there. And Swami asked, how come you came front? He said, Swami, for you I came. And Swami seemed so happy. Along with this Pushkaraj were one or two others also. So Swami said, see, for Swami's sake they are coming like this. But then Swami said, but if you do like this, you will get into trouble. He said, no Swami, no problem. You know, it's nothing. So Swami said, be careful, you will get into trouble if this is what happens. And Swami walked into the interview room. 5 minutes later, everybody comes, and as Pushkaraj said, there were so many students who knew that these people are doing this kind of a scam. Probably they were jealous that they didn't have that courage and bravado to do such scams. At the same time, they were irritated that some places are forever reserved because these guys are coming in the front. So they were muttering under their breath. They had also missed darshan. That day Swami comes out of the interview room and calls for the warden. I think Sanjay Sani sir was the warden that time. He called and he says, warden, what's happening to your hostel discipline? And he points out, you and these 4 or 5 boys. And he says, these boys were here even before. Do you even know of that? Don't you think you should keep under control? And Swami, who seemed so furious, he said, this better not repeat in future. And then Swami walked into the interview room. Now the warden decided to take it very seriously. He there itself warned all these boys in the portico, and then he said that you will be under special surveillance by the teachers to ensure that you never scam and get to mandir before. And then guess what happens? Half an hour later, the interview room door opens and Swami calls Pushkaraj inside. Mm-hmm. And this boy and two others, they also go in, and Swami says, I told you, right, you will get into trouble. Okay? Now see the beautiful thing. Swami says, if you love Swami, now come in the front and show. See that? You love Swami, right? And that's why you're coming front, no? Now come in the front and show. Because whatever is illegal, I have put an end to it. And Pushkaraj says that when he went back, he was really thinking, I will take up Swami's challenge. I love Swami, I want to come in the front. But how on earth? All surveillance is on me. I just can't scam anymore. It's like you have been told that what is your goal is noble, but your means were bad. The how you were doing it is bad. What you are doing is good, but how you are doing it is bad. So I've cut it off. I've cut off the illegal ways of you doing it. Now let us see how you do it. And Pushkaraj says, as time went on, what finally happened was, one day he noticed there was a boy who was injured and he was unable to go to Mandir. Because he loves to have darshan, he knows what it means to miss darshan. So he borrowed somebody's cycle and took the sick boy to the Mandir for darshan. And then he slowly, that became a practice. After that, he says that that was the year when a formal department was formed where a sick boy on a cycle or a two-wheeler will be taken to Mandir, and he became one of the foremost promoters of the department. He joined, and then because a sick boy, it takes time to go, he was given permission to go earlier before the lines.
Okay.
So whenever there's a sick boy, he goes before lines, and nobody minded Pushkaraj going ahead because, you know, he's helping. He became popular in the hostel for that, for his large-heartedness. And finally, it so happened that he ended up sitting almost every day in the front, now by a legal means, a means by which the warden was happy, the hostel was happy, everyone is happy because, you know, Pushkaraj is doing seva. Let him go, he's going earlier. And finally, Pushkaraj also achieved his goal of sitting in the front and having darshan from prime spots, but now doing it in the proper manner.
Beautiful.
So that is how, you know, Swami molds not only about how, what we do, but on how we do it also. Because if dharma and goodness is the goal, dharma or goodness also has to be the means.
Very beautiful. As you can see, these are lessons for a lifetime. It's nothing about having darshan or breaking the hostel schedule. These are lessons for a lifetime.
Right. The thing is, Swami, I mean, if you look at this incident, Swami does not right away say it's wrong, because the end goal is finally, it is, you know, when anything done for Swami is right in that sense. But at the same time, we're going to come to that next point. We'll do that after taking a short break. How Swami says, you know, going for Swami, ignoring the others around, could actually be not the right thing to do. We'll take a short break, dear listeners. Don't go away. We'll continue our discussion on the other side of this.
Bye.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We were talking about one particular discourse which Swami gave in the higher secondary school. If I'm not wrong, I think 1996, 18 January. Mm. But even to think of it, that Swami was giving this discourse to students who were in the higher secondary school, I think till from 8th to 12th. And Swami was giving such a deep discourse to them. And we were talking about the five aspects of Yama. In fact, Swami starts with not Satya. We started with Satya. Swami actually starts with Ahimsa. Mm. Swami is saying how Ahimsa is the most important principle to be followed. And again, just like how we spoke on Satya, Ahimsa does, Swami does not stop with just not harming others physically. That's like the most superficial and gross idea. And of course, Swami goes on to say that you don't hurt anybody in thought, word, and deed. That's one step higher. But then Swami goes on to say that even hurting yourself is Ahimsa. Because the
moment. Himsa.
Is Himsa.
Hmm.
Right? Holding yourself from hurting yourself is Ahimsa.
Correct.
Where, you know, I think we made a mention of it last satsang also. If you have to treat yourself as not this body, then you don't treat this body as yourself by, you know, we generally do that. I think in the 1990 Samukos discourse also Swami says this. How can you kill the snake by hitting the anthill?
Exactly.
Right? So Swami goes on to say that a form of harming yourself physically is also considered as Himsa.
I remember, Prem, I'm sure you also remember that before this, for the Ladies' Day, we had done a satsang on, you know, femininity, masculinity and the like. In that also, this came up and I'll just reiterate it for some of our listeners who might have missed it. There we saw that masculinity and femininity is not about male and female, men and women. It is just like we have positive and negative terminals in a battery. And again, there positive and negative does not mean positive literary and negative literary. It's just two ends. Like, let us say North and South Pole. Just as we have North Pole, South Pole, like that we have masculinity and femininity. And we discussed how masculinity is about giving importance to yourself, your feelings. So, a good expression of masculinity is self-confidence. And a bad expression of masculinity, an overdose of masculinity, is arrogance. Similarly, femininity is the other end, where you give importance to others. And therefore, a good level of femininity leads to empathy, compassion, sympathy, and all these. Too much of it leads to self-degradation, self-deprivation, self-criticism. So, too much of masculinity leads you to hurt others. Too much of femininity leads you to hurt yourself. So when, therefore, we discussed how we need to have a perfect balance between masculinity and femininity. When there is harmony between these two, then alone will you be a self-confident, compassionate, empathetic person who cares for everyone and for yourself. And there later we discussed how that is possible only when we believe in divinity everywhere. I love myself because I am divine. I love others because others are divine. So when Swami speaks of Ahimsa, he's speaking of this truth. And Swami says, that is why Buddha said, Ahimso Paramo Dharmaha. That Ahimsa is the ultimate Dharma, because when you truly follow Ahimsa, you are able to see the same divinity pervading yourself and everyone around. Therefore, Ahimsa is not only about not hurting others, it's also important that you don't hurt yourself. And when you say hurt, it's not just physical, it's also mental, and it's in thought, word and deed.
And in that discourse, Swami goes on to say one more thing, you know, we're talking about not harming yourself. Swami says that, you know, mentions that excessive eating is harming yourself. Excessive sleeping is harming yourself. And, you know, not taking care of your body without exercise is harming yourself. So in a sense, Swami says, puts it into perspective that all that you do, what we spoke of last week about disciplines in the hostel, are actually falling in this category of Ahimsa, you know, following not harming yourself. Because, you know, if talking about our hostel days, the food was not so less that it will starve you, but at the same time you can't splurge. You know, there's always a limit. Yeah. And Swami would always, as you said, even the primary school, Swami would come and ask, how many idlis did you have?
Correct.
What is the thing? So Swami would always insist that you should be fed well, but at the same time there was always a limit, because it's understandable in a hostel you would always have limited things. And again, sleep is... you're never deprived of sleep in that sense, but always that right amount. You know, Swami would say that you sleep early, but at the same time try to get, wake up a little early. And there's this one particular video which the hostel boys had released. Mm-hmm. I'm sure all of us have seen it, of Swami giving instructions in Trai Vrindavan.
Trai Vrindavan, yes, that's right.
You know, so beautifully and so playfully, Swami asks, you know, what time do you get up? And then Swami goes on to describe that scene in the
Suprabhatam.
You know, mm-hmm. somebody covers himself with a blanket, and Sapala just wakes up, doesn't brush his teeth, and comes. In fact, that's another place where Swami makes that point. See, it's like you have to follow all this, but don't do it by force.
Correct.
You know, it should come from source, that you should feel that you should do it for Swami. And you know, Swami describes that, you know, why you should wake up early and why you should eat less, why you should do exercise. And all of this comes under Ahimsa. And in that same discourse, Swami goes on to tell another point, which again brings another aspect about hostel life. Swami says that, you know, what these Jains usually follow. They cover their mouth with a cloth. They keep sweeping their path when they walk. Swami says, because inadvertently you do a lot of Ahimsa.
Correct.
And then Swami says that is why you do, you know, Brahmarpanam. That's why you offer everything to God. And then Swami says, see, you can offer acts such as these which have done inadvertently. You cannot willfully and consciously hurt a person and then say, I offer it to God.
Okay.
Swami says, you should do Brahmarpanam. You should do, you know, offering whatever you do, your day's activity to God. And I think the night prayer which we chant is precisely that.
Correct.
You know, whatever mistake
correct.
I have done.
Bhaf,
right.
Yeah.
Swami would say, but offer the mistakes which have been done either inadvertently and consciously try to prevent what can be prevented.
You know, just talking of Ahimsa, I am looking at it like a sandwich between two aspects. If Ahimsa is in the center, on this side of Ahimsa, before Ahimsa, we have something like Kshama, forbearance.
Right.
See, you need to have a lot of forbearance if you do not want to harm another person.
Hmm.
You don't want, suppose you are in a room, and that's precisely the reason why we are made to share the room. In fact, in the hostel, you have all the roommates, and you know, each one has his own nature. Somebody is snoring aloud, and you're not getting sleep. You have to be gentle. You cannot go and pour a bucket of water on his face. You say, brother, please take some medication, do something, but please don't snore at night. You know, you need to have that forbearance. So on this side of Ahimsa, you have something called forbearance. And Swami has given elaborate discourses on Kshama. He says Kshama is such an important virtue.
Quality, huh?
It's a quality that a sadhaka should have. So then you have Kshama, you have Ahimsa, and on the other side of Ahimsa, I'm just, you know, it's a way of saying, talking of Tyaga, sacrifice. See, because the moment there is empathy, there is, you know, you're not hurting another person, but then you go out to help him. You know, there is a small incident which comes to my mind right now. I had asked one of the school teachers, I asked him, sir, we have students studying from class 1, in Swami's institutions. And class 11, there are students who join from outside. Just as a general observation, do you find any difference between the two?
Mm.
Here is a student who has gone through 10 years of Sai system, and here is a person who has joined from outside. Yes, devotees, parents are devoted to Swami, whatever, they have studied in a different environment, but they have come here. He said there is a remarkable difference, and there is something which just comes to my mind, which, you know, which defines that kind of a difference. I asked him, what is it? He said, let me give you an example. In case there is a student who's fallen sick, and the next day you are having exams. If I tell a student who has studied here from class 1, he will rush to help that boy. He will not bother about his own exams. But if I tell a person who has joined in the 11th standard, he will think twice. Sir, tomorrow I have exam, sir. How will I go and do it? He says, I have seen this happening over and over again. See, unknowingly, you have so much love and faith in Swami. Okay, we'll study at night, we'll study early morning. But this boy is having a problem. He's not well. Let me rush. Let me go and help him. So that sacrifice, you know, that comes. Yes, not harming is one thing, but then somebody is already in a state of need, you rush out to help him. So on this side of Ahimsa, if you talk of Kshama or forbearance, then on the other side you have Tyaga. I mean, it's like an integrated chain.
I would like to add a few more points, because I feel Sai Prakash covered one aspect of Ahimsa that Swami speaks about not harming others. On the side of not harming oneself, you know, Prem, to some extent you covered it, saying how Swami says overeating is himsa, because you're troubling your body, sleeping too much, anything in excess. Is it surprising that Buddha, after saying ahimsa paramo dharmaha, next he stresses on the middle path? Because any extreme is himsa. Middle path, moderation is always ahimsa. Any extreme, I think that is one nice takeaway for us, that any extreme is himsa and the middle path is ahimsa. And therefore, you know, it comes to even our own desires that we have. It's not as if you should become desire free. It is not like you have to fast. Because that is what even the Buddha discovered. He went fasting and he said, no, this is not the way. I cannot, as you said, you cannot kill the snake by beating the anthill. At the same time, it doesn't mean that you splurge and eat, indulge in gluttony. So there has to be some kind of a ceiling on desires. And today when we see, we realize that so beautifully Swami has integrated the ceiling on desires into the hostel. Ahimsa. So we see this connection that exists between ahimsa and ceiling on desires. And you know, Swami, in that same discourse, later on, highlights the power that is present in ceiling on desires. Swami says, start with a simple thing like giving up coffee. And Swami gives, you know, practical benefits like a Falashruti. Every stotram has a Falashruti.
Correct.
Those who chant this will get this, like that. Swami says, you give up coffee drinking, just coffee drinking, the habit of coffee. Control your desire for coffee, and Swami says, your memory will increase so much. And then Swami says that willpower that people speak about is more of won't power actually. Willpower doesn't develop by deciding, I will do this, I will do this. He says it will develop more by saying, I won't do this. Restrain yourself, curb the desire, you will see that your willpower grows to tremendous amounts. And now when I extrapolate this statement of Swami, we say that Swami has Vajrasankalpa. Divinity has a will that is as strong as diamond. That is because Swami has absolute sense control. Absolute sense of control results in Vajrasankalpa. You know, all these grand, phenomenal, beautiful truths are brought to us into our day-to-day life unconsciously, if I can say so, because I am sure that unless we spend some time trying to analyze this, we wouldn't have discovered the gems that have been imparted to us without our knowledge.
When you're saying Swami has absolute sense control, that's really amazing, because if you are, you know, quote unquote, out of form, as he is coming in the darshan line, if he wants to avoid you, his eyes will go to the person next to you, it will jump over you, and then it will go to the next person. Swami, I'm here. Please don't forget me, I'm here. But that is the kind of control. If he wants to speak to you, he will speak to you. As we were discussing, food is not just what we eat through the mouth. It is everything. Food is what you take in through all the senses. And ceiling on desires, sense control, means controlling all the different senses. And in every aspect, we saw how Swami exemplified sense control.
Very true. We'll move on to the third point which Swami makes there. And, you know, it just gets so much more interesting how Swami deepens our understanding in some of these points. The third one, as I've been told us, is asteya. And asteya is generally translated as non-stealing.
Correct.
Like not taking away somebody else's possession without their knowledge. And Swami was going on to say how important this is. And one particular point which caught my attention, Swami saying in this, is I think most of us don't steal. You know, unless you have somebody is having a serious flaw in the character or a psychological problem, most of us don't steal.
Unless you consider the chocolates that our listeners bring and offer it to us lovingly. We keep two in everybody's place. Somebody is absent. The next day, I pick up that. If you consider that stealing, possibly I steal. Otherwise, yeah, I don't think we steal.
Right. But then Swami goes on to, you know, expand this concept, and he says, even stealing somebody else's good name is bad.
Exactly.
Swami
stealing
says,
the merit, yes.
Swami says, criticizing somebody in their absence is considered as stealing.
And in a commercial world today, and in an office environment, that is so important. When you are trying to steal the hard
credit.
Work of credit.
Right, credit, take credit for
take
somebody
credit
else's
for,
hard work.
In fact, I remember very clearly, see, everything that Swami did has such a deeper meaning. For festival days, you know, we used to make cards. And we should, so one day we had made, and every festival we used to take the cards. So then we thought, okay, let us give an opportunity to some of the other boys. And we gave the card to them, you take it and show it to Swami. First thing Swami asked, did you do it? Did you draw this card? Did you make this card? That boy was totally taken. He said, no, Swami. Then why did you bring it? See, you cannot take the credit of what others have done. You stand for what you did. That's it. I mean, Asteya is very deep.
You know, talking about something like this, I mean, we mentioned this much before. Once I remember one of the elders was speaking in Swami's presence, and he was narrating about an incident where he was involved in an accident and he escaped without even a scratch.
Okay.
And he was explaining the whole thing in Trai Brindavan. He was explaining and he said, you know, Swami protected me. And Swami like literally cut him short and he said, no, I did not protect you. And that devotee was a little taken aback because he was so thrilled narrating that experience. Because there was no other way he could have escaped that accident. And Swami stopped him and said, no, I did not save you. And then Swami explained that he said he has done so much of good work, you know, in the form of seva, in the form of working in Swami's organization. He has done so much good karma that at that moment when he needed it, I did not have to step in at all. That good karma was itself enough to protect you. You know, talking about not taking credit, you know, to what extent Swami is going. Swami is even saying that, you know, this is not, you did not even need my grace. This is just the good that you have done which has protected you.
I think this example, we have used it before many times, but still it fits in so perfectly here. The convocation drama that we see and admire every year, how it has shaped through the decades and through the years. If we see, originally Swami would himself dictate the script, but then Swami is intimately involved in the costumes, in the songs, he has seen the dress rehearsals, he makes corrections, he makes changes. Even before the actual convocation drama is staged on the day of the convocation, Swami has seen it at least 5-6 times. He knows the in and out, everything. At the end, he applauds and gives total credit to the boys for what they have done. Actually speaking, you know, it is very easy for Swami to say that, you know, all this is mine only. In fact, why the convocation drama, this drama called life itself, belongs to him. And yet we have seen Swami give credit to everyone else. Rarely have we ever seen Swami take credit onto himself. And isn't that the reason why even by chance, as Swami mentions in the discourse, that this Satya Sai will never do it, we all applaud and clap, because whatever he said later is secondary. The very fact that Abba Swami took his name, Swami speaking about himself, it is so thrilling. We would love to listen to Swami speaking about himself. I'm not sure we can tell the same sentence about anybody else. We don't want to listen to you speaking about yourself.
Correct.
Because most of us are only filled with ourselves. It is Swami who is only filled with others and speaking about others, that on those rare occasions when he speaks about himself, we get thrilled and we applaud.
Very true. And in fact, this thing is again something which Swami would repeat so many times, you know, criticizing others, talking ill of others in their absence. And many times Swami would even test. You know, Swami would, I remember some of the students whom Swami used to call for an interview. Swami would ask them about his roommates.
Uh-huh.
You know, how is this boy? How is that boy? Swami would name some students and see whether, you know, when given an opportunity when nobody is there to hear, are you indulging in...
in quotes, will you bitch about the person? You know, that's what...
Right. And Swami would say that boy is a little like this, you know, like to see whether you're... And again, even in that process, Swami would say how well you maneuver the situation.
Tactfully.
Right? Because you can't lie to Swami. You can't call black-white.
No, another important aspect of Asteya is creating the environment for making it happen. Like, for example, if you are in a room of 12 and you know 4 people are extremely rich and they have a lot of money in their cupboard, and then you know others are very poor, the temptation arises when you know that somebody is rich, somebody is poor. But Swami has made the system such, you may be the son of a multimillionaire, you may be a son of a taxi driver, same white dress. You are there with white dress, you are there with a plate and a spoon and a glass in your hand. There's no differentiation. In fact...
And that is the common minimum program. If I can say, you know, in mathematics we have something called HCF, highest common factor, and LCM, least common multiple. In Swami's case, he would merge the HCF and LCM. This list that is given is the highest common, you can't get more than this. At the same time, this is the minimum you have to get this much. So this much is there. So everybody, as Sai Prakash says, is equal. I'm sure many of us for so long did not realize the wealth or poverty, the emotional problems or the anything. We all just felt we are all equal. One like it's like each one living for the other and all living for Swami.
Right. In fact, talking about criticizing, and probably it's a good point to bring in the other aspect which Swami would many times mention. Swami would speak about having less contacts.
Correct.
This is something which Swami would repeat so many times. In fact, I've come across some people who complain that Swami's students are not very friendly.
Not warm.
Not, right,
not very warm. Not very social. Right. That's the more apt word. Because many times this is something which Swami has inbuilt in us. As you said, I would have lived with a boy, you know, as a roommate, as my cupboard mate, I wouldn't know what's his mother tongue.
Exactly.
I wouldn't know his social status. I wouldn't know, you know, about his family.
Forget mother tongue. You wouldn't know his mother.
Right. He won't know anything about the family, about their siblings, anything like that. Because Swami had kept it like that. You know, Swami would say that keep it relevant. Whatever you discuss, keep it relevant. You go for a discussion, do only that. Don't go around talking. In fact, this is something which we would try to follow more rigorously, especially when Swami is upset with us.
Yeah.
You know, more silence. Probably we'll just play a small clip. This is again from Trai Vrindavan.
Okay.
Where Swami says, why you have to have that less contacts?
Okay.
You know, you have come here to establish a contact with God. And when you keep that always in mind, you will remember that any other contact is actually
a distraction.
A distraction. It's coming in the way of this task which you've come here for.
Nice.
Swami is teaching a lot, keeping in you your welfare and the future, how far you developed attachment. Swami loves you more than your own parents. Swami expects that you should come up. Swami expects that you should be ideal students. These words don't reach your head. You have misdirected attachment. If anyone tells bad, immediately it gets into your ear. You have attached wrong attachment, not good attachment. So long there are wicked feelings, there will be certainly loss, never a profit. Here, friend. Who is your friend? There is no friend in this world. Each one is selfish and carries on the life out of selfishness.
Friendship.
They say friendship.
Ship ante empty.
You understand clearly what you mean by ship?
Ship ante padava. Steamer.
Ship. Where is the ship? It is in ocean.
Kavati, this ship, friend, ship chest. Munchi vesthu samudram.
Therefore, this friendship will dip, will immerse the ship.
This ship friend will munch vesthu samudram.
This ship friend will immerse in ocean. Therefore, it is ship. How does it immerse?
Why?
Instead of convenience, you will naturally float. If you turn against his desires, he will try to hurt you in every possible way. Therefore, first thing, run away from the bad company. Since it is not possible to decide good and bad, have limited association. In respect of subject, you just talk. If you need a pen, you can just ask for it, sir. Going for the pen, you can complete the transaction in a moment, but you spend 1 hour. You are gone for the pen, why should you discuss other things? Because of unnecessary matters discussed, you lose your noble thoughts. Therefore, you should be to a limited extent. When you are like that, our life will be ideal.
That was the discourse clip where Swami was, how sweetly and how patiently Swami is explaining, what all happens when you get too friendly with somebody. And as I said, this is something which Swami would tell so often that it's so ingrained in us that we hardly go beyond a certain amount of courtesy with a stranger, which sometimes is very surprising for others.
Yeah, he would say two things as school students. He would say two things: talk less, have less contacts.
Right.
It's almost like A and B of the alphabets in this institute.
We were speaking of Asteya, and from there we have derived all this. It is so fantastic because I feel, as we go through more and more, it is so thrilling to know that, everything is based on such sound logic that is ancient, that is eternal. And one more point along with Asteya that came in my mind, if we see a little deeper, if we should not covet, not steal somebody else's good name or whatever, that is only possible again if we consider everyone as equal. That's why, I mentioned that statement that Swami has given as a watch statement for all of us. That is, everyone lives for each other, but each one lives for the other, but everyone lives for God. If we focus on only one side, everyone lives only for God, it might lead to indifference, not caring for the other. If we focus on only each one lives for the other, then it might lead to attachment, unnecessary contacts. So that is why it is both. As Swami would say, it's not enough if you say, I am not an animal. You should also say, I am man. In the same way, it's not enough just to say all are living for God or we are living for each other. Each one lives for the other, all live for God. And I feel this is akin to another analogy that Swami has given of how the finger is part of the palm, which is part of the hand, which is part of the body. So the finger goes and helps the leg possibly by pulling out a thorn, not because it loves the leg, not because it's attached to the leg, because it feels oneness with the leg. Because after all, it's part of the same body. And if somebody asks, why is your hand helping your leg? You will think that guy is crazy to ask such a question because it's such a natural thing. And I feel this, Swami, when he says, Vyashti, the individual is part of Samashti, which is society, which is part of Srishti, nature, which is part of Parameshti, God. I feel that is nicely encapsulated in that statement, each one lives for the other and everyone lives for God. So Asteya or non-stealing, not taking away what belongs to others, will become natural when we see no difference between others and ourselves, when we realize that we are all one big organism living for Swami, each one, and therefore we are living for each other because we are all part of the same thing. Then everything becomes so crystal clear.
Just one point in the sense, when you say living for each other, automatically something called sharing comes in. Like I am a person who has a little more to give. So if suppose I get some goodies from my parents, I'm just talking of the hostel scenario. If I preserve, lock up my cupboard and keep it in my cupboard, then you're creating an environment for somebody to steal it or rob it. But if you are open and in the true spirit of living for each other, if you share it with everyone, the moment you share, so that applies in a very big way to society. I mean, if you are a person with haves, there are people haves and have nots. If you have an excess, when you start sharing, even a thief will not steal from your house. Because you say, no, this man is rich. Yes, he has worked hard, but he always shares. He is a noble soul. But this fellow is a miser. He has a lot of money, but he does come, let us loot his house. No, I'm just saying, it has a very deep implication. Asteya, not stealing, is equally important not to create the environment for stealing.
Incidentally, in my 12th standard in school, I had two roommates. One roommate, he's very weak in his studies. The other roommate was brilliant in his studies. But that guy who is brilliant came from a very poor background, you know. And this guy, not that he's ultra rich, but every week his parents or grandparents would visit and his cupboard would be filled with goodies. You know, so it used to be so amazing that every week after meeting his parents or grandparents, he would come, he would have had only half a lunch with them. Because then he comes, and of course in the school we were six of us in the room. He'll come to the room and open up his goodies. And he's the one who would be giving all of us and we would be having one mass sharing eating session. Come the exam time, this brilliant guy whom I'm speaking about, he'll open his books and it would be like a pravachan. He'll start. And again all of us sit and we benefit from what he's telling. So you know, when you say that if you're endowed with something you give, I feel it is not only limited to physical wealth.
Correct.
This guy is endowed with so much of intelligence. So he shares his intelligence.
Correct.
This guy is endowed with food. So he shares his food. So I feel this brings up then another point, possibly the fifth point that Swami states, which is aparigraha, which is non-coveting others. In that, you know, aparigraha, which is the fifth point, we have skipped the fourth point as of now, we'll come back to that. In aparigraha, usually what is stressed upon is non-covetousness, that you don't covet what others have. And as you beautifully put it, Sai Prakash, so that one should not covet, everyone should be sharing. Then
correct.
There is no coveting. Swami, while explaining aparigraha, makes a beautiful statement. He says, aparigraha means you don't accept gifts from anyone.
Correct.
He says you are allowed to accept gifts only from your parents, from your guru, and from God. If anybody else gifts, you have to return back, Swami says. And I feel that is where this comes in. Return back need not be in kind. That boy is coming and giving jalebis to everyone. It's not as if next week you get back jalebis. But you also have to ensure that just as he has given you something and touched your life, you also give back something to him and touch his life, possibly through your academics,
correct.
Possibly through helping him in the games or helping him in a drama, whatever way possible. So then you know, it becomes a perfect, just the way, like, again, so you know, Swami brings the human body as the example for everything. The heart is supplying blood to every part of the body. The brain can't give back blood to the heart. But the brain again selflessly gives what it can give.
Correct.
The eye gives what it can give. Then we have a beautiful functioning human body without any problem. Everything doesn't do the same. But whatever it does with the same spirit that I am doing for everyone because everyone is a part of me.
In fact, going back to Patanjali's and his concept of the aparigraha, it's very important because, you know, as we said in the beginning, it is all for the making of a yogi. Like, you know, and this aparigraha, even Swami explains, is in many, many ways. When you say it is not accepting a gift, what do you define as a gift? Well, how is a gift different from a remuneration? A remuneration is, I've done my work, I deserve, I mean, I have the right over this much of money or this much of
my salary,
or my salary. But gift is something which comes to you, which is beyond your means. Like, no, you've not done anything. Somebody is out of their love giving it to you. So Swami defines that who are the people whom you can accept from. Swami says you can accept from your parents. You can accept from your siblings as much as you can return.
Oh.
And Swami says you can't accept from anybody else. And so, dear listeners, that's also a reason why we keep telling all our listeners that please don't get gifts for us. You know, you can always contribute to Swami's mission, but not to people who are involved in Swami's mission. You know, that's why we always keep refusing, and it's a difficult time to ward off the love of some of our listeners. But something that Swami says here is that, you know, don't, and taking this deeper is, Swami goes on to say, that you go to a state where you do everything as a duty which does not call for any result.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, this is the next step of aparigraha, which is like the way Swami wants all of us to act. That you do it without any expectation of not just remuneration, but any result for that matter. I do it because I'm supposed to do it. You acknowledge it, you don't acknowledge it. You give me in return, you don't give me in return. I'm supposed to do this.
Yeah, I mean, that is the actual meaning of aparigraha, where you go beyond any expectation. In fact, here at this point, I'm reminded of that story which Swami often quotes of Gautam Buddha. He's walking on the street and going, and there is a person criticizing him, coming behind him. He's shouting at him, and the Buddha is absolutely at calm. He's just walking and going. then this fellow is exhausted. He comes and says, aren't you upset with me? I've been shouting at you, I've been abusing you, I've been talking all sorts of things. Then he smilingly explains to him, he says, if somebody comes and gives you a gift, what do? He says, I take it or I don't take it. So he says, if you do not accept the gift, you give it back. So you are giving me gifts of abuse. I don't want them. I'm giving them back to you. So nothing has happened to me. So you, aparigraha reaches to that level where you want nothing from anybody.
Both what Prem and Sai Prakash, both of you have said, is something I feel is a real lofty level.
Yeah.
That is a Buddha's level, and this is what Krishna told Arjuna, Prem, what you said. I feel even before that, there is if I can say, an easier level.
Practical level.
Yeah, we all always think of...
mundane level.
Yeah, we often think of easy things as practical. Because the lofty things seem so impractical. Come on, I can't be like the Buddha. But yeah, so in that sense, at a practical level, I remember how Swami would, during the MBA discourses, especially to the MBA boys, and then generally to the boys also, would stress on, do work commensurate to your salary. Because, you know, as you said, Prem, it's okay that when I do some work, I get my salary, remuneration. But if I have not done my work properly, then that also becomes a gift. Because I am getting something for what I don't deserve. Then I am violating aparigraha. And that's why Swami would always say, ensure that you work commensurate to your salary. In fact, in discourses, Swami would say, you take 10,000 rupees, but don't do work of even 10 rupees. Then you are actually doing... parigraha, I mean, I hope that is the opposite of a parigraha. You're doing terrible things because you're taking a big gift. You're not doing anything. You're not doing anything and simply, it's almost amounts to robbing money. Just taking money for nothing. And so that, I feel, is in quotes, practical level, that is something we should all do. Do our duty sincerely. And as Swami says, just think, what is the salary that I'm receiving? What is the work I'm doing? Am I really doing work that is that valuable? If not, how should I do? Or that is, you know, I feel that is why among those who are conscientious, they start, you know, donating the money or using it to build a charity fund. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, it is often said, it is toughest to earn your first million. Once you earn your first million, millions simply seem to be coming to you. And at that time, you really wonder, you know, there are people whom, if you calculate the amount they earn per day, 1 second earns them 5,000 rupees. Are you doing something so valuable? Just your breathing is worth 5,000. You will see that such people set up huge foundations and try to, you know, it's almost like a positive way of getting rid of your money. Because there is something that is gnawing into you that, you know what, I'm not doing anything, I'm getting all this. This is only in the monetary way. In the similar manner, we are blessed with so many things. I feel in all of these are like gifts from God. We should see whether we are worthy of receiving it. In fact, at the cost of speaking little excess, let me also state one beautiful point I saw in the recent Mahabharata. Star Plus came out with a Mahabharata, which is quite different from the original story, but there were some really wonderful points. And one of the points is what Krishna makes to Karna. Karna, when he's falling on the battlefield, he says, Krishna, is this dharma? And there they show a kind of time freeze, and Krishna and Karna have a dialogue. I don't know if this actually happened, but it's a beautiful dialogue where Karna says, Krishna, throughout life, I have met with injustice. I was born a prince, but I was thrown into a charioteer's family. I couldn't get my rights on the kingdom. I'm a great archer, but I couldn't do any of this. Why? And is this the end that I'm getting? That time Krishna says one beautiful point. Krishna says, Karna, do you know that you are not just one like this? You are a representative of so many archers who are not getting their due. You are a representative of so many who are actually worth that much but have been downgraded. But you know what? You got an opportunity which Duryodhana gave you. He made you a king. Now, what did you do for thousands of others like you who are languishing? Did you do even this much? What right have you got to say about adharma? Because you didn't utilize your opportunities. Did you stand for the rights of all those archers who have been neglected? For all those who are actually being ostracized? Did you do anything for them even in your own kingdom? No. then what is the use of going on crying? Because along with your minuses, you are given so many pluses. When you have not utilized your pluses, don't cry about your minuses. So I feel that is one lesson we should take. Instead of complaining that life has not given me enough of this, enough of that, we should focus on what so much of life, I mean, I'm able to walk on my 2 feet. There's at least 1% of the earth's population that can't walk. How am I benefiting others by me walking on my 2 feet? These are things we should think.
Now, just taking the same Karna example, also, did Duryodhana pick up all the archers? No, he picked up Karna because he knows Karna will be beneficial to him. See, the intention with which he picked up Karna is a selfish one. He wanted Karna's support to overthrow Arjuna.
Correct.
So Karna feels indebted to Duryodhana for because he has fed him, he has brought him up. He has received gifts from Duryodhana. So he has pledged all his talent. He has pledged his entire life to Duryodhana. But the intention with which Duryodhana gave Karna is not a pure one.
Probably Karna should have gifted Duryodhana with a sense of dharma and morality.
Exactly.
Instead of gifting him with his skill.
And I think that's what Krishna says there as well. He says if you, Bhishma and Drona had stood up when adharma was being done, the war would not have happened.
And talking about Parigraha, and in this particular discourse, Swami, as I said, Swami says that you can take gifts from certain people. Some people, you know, limited access to those gifts. But then Swami makes a beautiful point. He says, but you can take as many gifts as you want from God.
Correct.
You know, God can always give you gifts and you can always accept gifts from
because
God.
Because he has no motive.
Right. No
it's
motive.
Absolutely selfless.
Right.
See, that's the beauty. The motive behind giving a gift is so important. When there is absolutely no motive, Swami has given us free education from class 1 to PhD. What does he want in return? Absolutely nothing. And you know,
if you force him to tell me, Swami, what do you want? What he says? Get a good name for yourself.
Get a good name for yourself. And it's so integrated in the entire philosophy of Swami's institute. What is he looking at? What does he want when you complete your education? Nothing. He wants you to grow. That's it. If you grow, it is good for you. If you don't grow, it's not good for you. It doesn't affect him in any way.
So I think the other side of Aparigraha is this. You know, one thing is not accepting gifts.
Yeah.
But if you are in a situation where you are giving gifts,
yes,
you will have to give it as close in emotion and intention like how Swami would give.
Selflessness.
Absolutely selfless and absolutely without any benefit. As Swami would say, even the idea that doing this is going to get me good karma or good brownie points or whatever, you know, just do it and forget what you've done.
You know, building on that, Prem, I feel when Swami says that you can receive as much as possible from God. Why? Because God is selfless. Now, I'm just thinking a little, I'm just sharing my thoughts, that's all. So, the only thing that defines God here is absolute selflessness.
Correct.
And if absolute selflessness is giving, you can receive as much as possible. Which makes me to think that probably when I give, if I really become absolutely selfless, I'm almost at the level of God in terms of giving.
Correct.
Which means I'm a worthy instrument who can give. And because I have become selfless and a worthy instrument to give, probably God will confer me with many more opportunities to give. And that is why I feel it is said that you receive a lot when you give a lot.
Exactly.
It's because when I become selfless and start giving, it's almost like Swami is saying, hey, you know what? It is ideal to gift humanity through this guy. Because this guy is gifting in the correct spirit. So come on, let me shower him with bounties, whatever way. So because through him when it goes, it is a perfect gifting. So in that sense also, we get gifted a lot by God when we are able to gift with that same selflessness.
Correct. In fact, just mentioning, because you mentioned Karna in this context, it's so apt. Dana Veera Shura Karna. Karna was known for his charity. I mean, he gave up his own kavach and kundal. In all those things, he was selfless. He never expected anything. Anybody asked him anything, he gave off. There is this classic story of Arjuna and Karna. Krishna says, there's a huge heap of gold. And Krishna says, you have to finish this by the evening. Then Arjuna calls all the Brahmins and one by one he is giving. Within minutes, Karna says it's done. There was one person who came, he gave the whole thing to them. See, Karna had such a large heart. But where he was misplaced is, he was blind to Duryodhana's selfishness. See, he should have, when he knew that Duryodhana is taking advantage of his goodness and his talent for a selfish purpose, he should have put a check on himself. He should have stood for Dharma. Because he didn't stand for Dharma there, he was shot down when he was pulling out the wheel from the, you know, chariot.
You know, the time in our studio is almost 1:56 and we have got Brahmacharya to cover. After which, there are some more points about the hostel, so probably we will delay our Ram Katharasa Vahini fortnight by one more week and cover this next week. Before we conclude, we know one more point about Aparigraha which Swami states in the discourse is, when it comes to your parents also, he says, it doesn't mean, you know, you can receive from them as much as they give out of love. You can't demand from them.
Correct.
That is one point he makes. He says, you can receive from your guru and parents whatever they give out of love. You can't demand. And
you can't say, I want iPhone 6, I want Samsung Galaxy, I want... No, that is old model, I want an upgraded model.
Absolutely. No, you drag your own parents to court. That is not accepted in, you know,
exactly,
in accepting
you
gifts.
You can't force them to give gifts. You can't drag them to court. And in fact, you know, in that context, Swami also speaks very strongly against this system of dowry.
Right.
Swami says, what on earth are you thinking? The girl getting married, that itself is a gift that you are being given with. On top of that, you are asking for gifts. He says, so, dead against dowry. And other thing is, gifts from your parents also have to come spontaneously out of love what they give. Out of love what they give, accept it, whatever it is, however much it is, however less it is. Don't ask. And then of course, as Prem said, the only person, only entity you can ask how much ever you want and receive how much ever you want from is God and God alone.
That's just a point before you close. Aparigraha, how Swami exemplified it in his childhood. He never asked his parents for another pair of clothes. His dress was torn, he took a thorn and then stitched it. He knew that his parents couldn't afford. He never went and stood and, I am the one who is studying here, you give me another pair of dress. He lived. And his robe, what is bare minimum for him? That's all. He never took anything more than that.
So dear listeners, with that we'll conclude this week's afternoon satsang. Really, there is so much to speak about it. And when you sit and think about it, the details with which Swami has created this entire schedule and all that goes in with a student's life in our university, we can only offer our most heartfelt gratitude to Swami. We hope you enjoyed this discussion, dear listeners. Thanks, Aprakash, for joining us today. And on behalf of both of them, we offer this humble effort of ours at Bhagwan's Lotus Feet. We'll leave you with a song. On the other side of it, you'll be joined by Chandu Vijay with this program, Love to Love.
Kanula mundara kadali aade karuna roopamuni పిలచినంతని పలుకరించే ప్రేమ భావము నీవు నీవే మా సర్వం నీవే మా ప్రాణం నీవే మా సర్వం నీవే మా ప్రాణం తరువుల తాకి గల గల పారు నదులము మేము అరుణ కిరణపు కాంతి మిల మిల మెరియు కడలివి నీవు మెరియు కడలివి నీవు నీవే మా సర్వం వేళల మధువు కొరతై వెదకు భ్రమరము నేను ఎల్ల వేళల మధువు కొరతై వెదకు భ్రమరమునేను ప్రేమ మధువును నిండియున్న హృదయ కమలము నీవు నీవే మా సర్వం నీవే మాతా కనుల ముందర కదలియాడే కరుణ రూపము నీవు పిలచినంతని పలుకరించే ప్రేమ భావము నీవు నీవే మా సర్వం